invited to come on over to Our Place. Our Place is a voice chat community that is now part of the ACB Radio portal. Here, people from around the world can hang out and chat in real time about a wide range of topics using the latest iVocalize technology. Our Place is now open. To join, just come on over and have some great conversation at http://ourplace.acbradio.org. That's ourplace.acbradio.org. The chat room software installs automatically, and all you need is a microphone connected to your sound card. It's easier than walking and chewing gum at the same time. So come on over. We'll be looking for you at Our Place. That's ourplace.acbradio.org.
ACB Radio.
Okay, I got us connected.
We're connected?
Yes.
Okay, we better go then.
Yep.
Bring up. All right, Gary. Okay.
I'll move off to your left so you can have, well, unless you want to go and ride the board.
No, it's, I may as well. Yeah, I better.
Yeah, so you can come around my chair. And
welcome, everyone, to the Microsoft Bits presentation. Unfortunately, due to circumstances well beyond my control, I'm not able to bring promos and things like that, but we do have levels for the feed from the Bits presentation, which is good. Let me just get comfortable and move the mic a bit this way. Excuse me, folks, for that. There we go. I can ride the board. Got it. Yeah. Right. Oh, I've lost it. I've lost level. Where am I? I haven't got me now. Well, I have, but not much of me. Very little of me, in fact. Yeah, let's have a bit more of me. Too much of me. There we go. There we go. That's it. I'm sorry about that, folks. But, right. We're in business. We're up in River Terrace 2. Of the Hyatt Regency. I'm Chrissy Cochran, and welcome along to this talk about Microsoft Vista. This is going to be interesting. I know nothing or very little about Vista. I've heard a lot of bad things. I've heard some good things. So we shall see. I think the presentation is... Let me just check. Rob, when's the presentation due to begin?
In about 2 minutes.
All right, the presentation should begin in about 2 minutes. Once again, I'm awfully sorry that we can't play promos and the like, but we ran out of cable. Let's get the truth of this. We ran out of cables. But anyway, I hope you enjoyed the convention session this morning. That was fascinating, some of the talk. On the various things that we did here. We are streaming to the world. It's amazing. It's beginning to fill up now.
Okay. Is there time
to run up
and get
them? Hold on.
Our presenters here, we're ready to start. Does he have time to run up and get his tickets, Frank or Rob?
We're waiting for the presenter to appear. And everyone's just sort of milling around at the moment, but they'll settle down in a bit, and we will be on with the presentation. And I trust you will enjoy it. There we go. It's scheduled to last about an hour and a half, I believe.
I didn't introduce myself before. I'm John Farina, Vice President for Bits.
Oh,
I'm Larry.
I'll tell you what. Let me.
Radio. I've been wanting to join Bits, but I haven't seen
let
you
me take a very, very quick interview with you then.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, you asked for that.
I see.
Okay, so yeah, I'm now talking with...
John Farina, BITS Vice President.
Well, for those who don't know, what is, are, or might be BITS?
Well, BITS is Blind Information Technology Specialist.
Can you check it out?
And we are a special interest group of the American Council of the Blind, devoted to all aspects of technology. Those who've been around ACB for a while will remember that there was a group called VidPi, Visually Impaired Data Processors.
Right.
And we are the next generation, if you will. That group was primarily formed during the time when computers were used for by visually impaired people for data processing, computer programming, that kind of thing. Today, we've graduated to those who use computers as a hobby, as a tool to pay their bills, to surf the internet and shop, to chat with people and all aspects of computers, to those such as myself and other people in our organization who teach computers to visually impaired people or are employed in other aspects of the computer and information technology arena.
Yeah, I was going to ask whether training was involved. You do quite a lot of training. The organization itself, or is this just individuals?
It's a variety of things. Each year at the ACB National Convention, BITS has its annual convention, and we try to devote most of that time, in addition to a business meeting, obviously, that we need to have.
Oh, yes.
With catching people up on the latest aspects of technology. This year's program was Sunday morning was a discussion of wayfinding or GPS technique systems, featuring Sendero, the PacMate, Freedom Scientific. Excuse me.
Yes, wait.
Yes, Rob.
Just got a slight pause at the moment because I'm still getting things together, and I think we'll be.
You're right there.
And we're.
I have one switch here.
You're listening to ACB Radio Mainstream. I'm Chrissy Cochran, and we are soon to bring you the Microsoft presentation.
Okay.
A guy, Gary Moulton. And I'm looking forward to this, I've got to say. Larry, what do you think? What do you think of the idea of Vista compared with, say, Windows XP?
I haven't really read a lot on it yet. That's why I'm here for this presentation as well. Of course, also to help out with ACB Radio.
Okay.
Okay,
gotcha.
It's, from what I hear, the front end is going to change a bit on how things look on the screen. I think it's going to be like something like a ribbon format or something like that. I'm not sure what it is, but we'll find out more in this presentation, I'm sure.
Oh, I'm sure we will.
Yeah.
Okay, well, I will be interested to see just how far they've got in terms of accessibility. Because Vista, it seems funny to me, because... Oh, they're having a membership drive at the moment, but it seems to me that Vista came out with the idea of Vista would be full blown and this that. I keep hearing BITS having been dropped off it, so how it will come out in the end, I don't know. Whether it will just be a glorified XP, in a sense, or what. But we shall see. I'm hoping we will learn this afternoon as to, however. Hey, hold on. Let's get this. How would one join BITS?
Okay, there are a couple of ways to join. If you are a internet surfer and you would like to do that, BITS has a PayPal account. The dues are $20 per year. Our year runs from July to June, so as we approach ACB convention time, our fiscal year ends. So we're collecting dues for 2006 now, 2006/7. If you are a life member of the American Council of the Blind, it is $15. If you're a student member, it's $10. You can pay via PayPal, as I said. The BITS website is acb.org/BITS, that's B-I-T-S, and you can see a little bit more about us there. You can see who's who in BITS, I believe, and the officer's contact information is there. It's pretty much up to date because we had our election yesterday, and the officers that we're currently standing are still standing for the next year. So I believe with one exception of a board position, the website's probably pretty much up to date.
Well, I should imagine if the bits can't keep a website up to date, we're in a bit of a bad way.
Well, our president is Erlene Hughes, who is ACB's own webmaster.
Ah, in that case.
If you can't keep it up to date, yes. We're all going to be on her case.
And does bits offer anything like a sort of help service if someone's in trouble with equipment or software?
We are looking into that, actually, as a long-term goal. We're looking into some things that might be mentoring, where more experienced computer jockeys, if you will help people who are new to the technology. It's not something that's set up formally at this point, but I would dare to say that contacting any BITS member would probably, if they can't help you, they'll be able to route you to somebody who can.
Right, but it's not sort of official.
We do have a BITS chat every week at forthepeople.com in the BITS meeting room. That's Saturday evenings at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. That's, what is that now, 0000 GMT with daylight saving time. No, actually.
Yeah, GMT.
GMT.
Having come over from London, I keep getting the times all wrong, and you're
right.
Absolutely right.
0000 GMT. That is a public room. It's not password protected or anything like that. So I invite people to come join us, learn a little about the organization there. We're just ending up our 2006 ACB program. This afternoon we'll be doing a presentation. We won't be doing it, but we'll be listening to a presentation from a representative of Microsoft who's going to bring us up to date on some of the new aspects of the Vista operating system, and I believe probably relate that to access technology issues. And we'll be beginning the planning process for our 2007 program in Minneapolis. If people have program ideas, they can contact me at john.farina, F-A-R-I-N-A, at earthlink.net. You'll get, unfortunately, stopped by the spam blocker, but I'll take care of that. I'll take care of that. But if you do have program ideas or things that you'd like to see us take a look at.
Does the spam blocker have an audio thing instead of this silly, nasty graphic?
I don't believe it does, but I usually get an allowed sender request, so I can take care of that.
You can actually take care of it.
And I look at the suspect email. So, and if I see, if people do want to contact me, put bits in the subject line, and that'll separate it from I may have already won or whatever loan application I'm.
Yeah. You've won, of course.
Yes, Rob.
Well, there you go. That's John Farina, president of BITS, telling you all about it.
Actually, vice president.
Vice president. Well, I get everything wrong. But that's just my role in life. That's fair enough. How near are we to start, folks? Do we know?
Rob, how are we doing on time?
Can you pot down a minute, Larry, while I put the mic back on the stand?
And do we have our presenter?
Okay.
I've got the house up. So we're
righto. There we go.
Good afternoon. Can everybody hear me in the back? Oh, good. I'm hearing. Welcome. For those of you who are wondering, this is River Terrace 2. If you belong here, welcome. If you don't, we'll try and get you squared away as to where you do belong. I take it that it's a little confusing this afternoon with some luncheons going on and some ambient noise as you go down the hall. It throws people off. This is the BITS program. It's our ending program for our 2006 convention, and we are very pleased to bring you this program this afternoon. My name is John Farina. I am the Vice President for BITS, which is Blind Information Technology Specialist. And we have a special treat today because, if I'm not mistaken, there are two guys in front of me who are bringing this program to the world on ACB Radio. So we're covering the world this afternoon. So hello, world, from beautiful, warm Jacksonville, Florida, where it may or may not be raining as you look out the window now. If you are interested in more information about Blind Information Technology Specialist, you can go to www.acb.org/bits, B-I-T-S, and get a whole bunch of information. Let me introduce our treasurer, who was speaking to you this morning about a little while ago about collecting money. That's Rob Rogers. And we have, I think, just about everybody from the board here today. Susan Thompson, Richard Villa. Who am I missing? Erlene Hughes is our president. I don't believe she's in the room. Oh, there she is. She's way back there. And who am I missing as board members here? Ron Milliman, are you here? No. Okay, Ron was recently elected to the board. And Frank Welty. Frank is our official gopher. And if you want to buy raffle tickets, I bet if you raise your hand, Frank will come and sell you a raffle ticket. He's never far
not
from
if
his
you
ticket
raise
book.
Your hand, but
oh, that's
you
right.
Around,
that's right. If you listen for him, trip him, and he'll give you a raffle
there
ticket.
There you go. Richard Villa is up in the front.
Okay. All right. So we have raffle tickets. Bits gets half the prize. You get the other half. And it's a worthwhile cause, obviously. We don't want to take any more of everyone's valuable time here, including our presenter this afternoon. So I would like to take this opportunity to thank our representative from Microsoft, and he's going to have to help me on his name because there are two people named Gary here, and I'm getting them confused. So we're going to turn it over to Gary, and he can tell you more about himself so I don't get it mixed up. And I'm sure it's going to be a very fascinating presentation, and there'll probably be some questions. Welcome, and thank you very much for taking the time out of your busy schedule for being here with us.
Thank you, Frank.
And I'll.
I'm set up over here at the podium. Do you want me to use?
Oh,
this?
You can use that. No, you can't. That's right. You have to use this one. That's right. Yep, you can put it in the podium.
But. All right, take out the one this year and put this one in. Good afternoon, everyone. Thank you for the invitation to be with you this afternoon. I'm very much looking forward to doing a couple demos, telling you a story that I think you'll be interested in, and then maybe opening up if we have time for discussion and Q&A. My name is Gary Moulton. I'm a product manager in Microsoft's Accessible Technology Group. The Accessible Technology Group is part of the Windows Client organization within Microsoft, and that's the group that's responsible for this new version of the operating system that you might have heard of called Windows Vista. Because I'm in marketing, I'm planning on going into a lot of details today, and I'm not sure whether or not that's appropriate or not. So I'm going to use anybody that walks out as an indication that I'm really off the mark here in terms of what I'm presenting, and I'll just keep talking until there's nobody left in the room. I am a Vista user myself for obvious reasons, being part of the Windows Client organization. Need to begin using the operating system that we're going to be releasing in the first part of 2007 on a day-to-day basis. Currently, the operating system is at a beta 2 level, and the machine that I'm going to actually be demoing on today is an earlier version of the Windows Vista build. from the one that I usually work on at my office. That's basically, suffice it to say that, as you know, it's a federal requirement for any presentation that's dependent upon technology to have one major technical difficulty in the course of the presentation. And as a result, I expect to be in full compliance with the federal regulations sometime this afternoon as a result of that. And I'm not planning on projecting or showing anything. I'm basically going to be talking from notes that I'll be more than happy to make available if anybody would like them, and basically flesh in the details of what I'm going to be presenting. At some point in time, if we get into discussion and Q&A, I'm going to be opening up WordPad on the machine that I'm going to be using for demo. And that, the only purpose of that is to capture any questions that you folks might have that I might not have answers for, so I can make sure that I get that information when I return to Redmond the next couple of days and get that information to you. So that is to say, I'd be happy to send my notes around to anybody, and if there's a way in terms of your organization here you have for blitting that information or distributing that information, I'll be happy to make all my notes, references available to you. As I said, there's only three things I'd like to accomplish this afternoon. I would like to tell you the story that we believe represents the accessibility accomplishments that we've been able to achieve with Windows Vista. I want to do a couple demos. I have a screen reader, Window Eyes, installed on this machine that I'll be demonstrating here this afternoon on this Beta 2 build of Vista. And I'm hoping you can take me on a tour, those of you that are familiar with Window Eyes, through the new version of Vista. Then I want to show you some of the new accessibility features that are part of the operating system, specifically the Ease of Access Center. And then, as I say, wrap it up with discussion. Q&A, maybe going into some next steps as well. Is that sort of what you were expecting by being here this afternoon? Is there anything else that I might need to make sure that I fill in the blanks in? Okay. All right. Let me begin with chapter one of the accessibility story behind Windows Vista by saying that it represents, I believe, Microsoft's unique approach to building an accessible operating system. I really think we've taken it to the next level in terms of accessibility to operating systems. As we go along, you'll see why I profess to make that particular claim. But at the same time, it's not to say that it's the only way to build an accessible operating system. So if there's anything at the end of this particular story that jumps into your mind as something that we might have might do differently in the next version of the operating system, that's the kind of information that we'd love to hear. The second part of this accessibility story necessitates working very closely with assistive technology vendors. For example, I do have and thank you very much to the folks at GW Micro for giving me permission to demonstrate their current version of Window Eyes working on Windows Vista. I think that's a bit historic. In the 20 years or so that I've been working in IT companies dealing with assistive technology products, I've never known a situation where an assistive technology product of any kind has already been compatible with the operating system before that operating system or that application got into Beta 2. Window Eyes was compatible, was up, that is to say, up and running on Windows Vista pre-Beta 2, and I think that's a pretty historical event, and it certainly speaks loads to the accomplishments of the folks at GW Micro. And again, I want to thank them for permission to be able to demonstrate their screen reader here this afternoon. And then finally, changes and whatnot that we have made in Vista. There's a number of them that we've included in the operating system to make it easier to be used by individuals with disabilities and functional limitations. I'll deal with some of those as I go along and complete the story. At the same time, I'll also demonstrate some of those features here in just a bit. So how do we come up with this approach that I'm talking about in terms of making an operating system accessible to individuals with disabilities? Let me take you back to the days of pre-Windows XP. What we were doing at that time is we were working, Microsoft's Accessible Technology Group was working with the internal teams within Microsoft that were responsible for the various components that were built into the operating system to alert them and to evangelize the idea that to be accessible, they had to ensure that assistive technology products were compatible with their particular components, the particular technology that they were building for Windows XP at the time. And the question that always came up, well, what does that mean? Who do we work with? And how do we determine who we work with? Well, in the Accessible Technology Group, we always talk about the five major categories of disabilities and the 16 different types of assistive technology products that are used by individuals who have various different types of disabilities to have access to an operating system or an application to be able to use it just like anyone else does, to learn to work, to think, and to play. So with Windows XP, what we did is we assembled a group of eight assistive technology manufacturers that represented at least one product in each one of those categories. So there was a product there that was used by individuals with learning disabilities, individuals with mobility impairments, individuals with vision impairments, language impairments, and so on. And we brought them onto campus for a week-long porting lab with Windows XP. Of those eight manufacturers, our goal was to ensure that each one of those eight products were going to be SIM shipping, meaning they were going to be compatible with Windows XP. There's an individual already leaving, so I know I'm off the mark a bit in terms of the detail. Thank you very much, sir. Six of those products, we wanted to make sure that all eight of those products were compatible with the operating system when it shipped at the same time. And the reason for that is anybody having to do with assistive technology and accommodations for individuals with disabilities hates to show up the day to work, the day after a new operating system or application ships. Right? Most of you, I think, are sort of nodding in agreement to that. You know that the different hardware and software products that you're dependent upon are not going to be compatible with the new operating system. Well, we wanted to ensure a different kind of experience with Windows XP. Well, out of those eight products that we work with in this porting lab for Windows XP, within 6 months of the shipment of Windows XP, six of those products were up and running on Windows XP. Now, at the time, this goes back now, you know, 5 or 6 years ago, that was a major accomplishment because the track record up until that time was individuals with disabilities typically had to wait a year, maybe a year and a half, in some cases almost 2 years, before the assistive technology products that they were using were compatible with the new operating systems or applications that were out there. And of course, if you're waiting 18 months or 2 years, typically you're stepping upon a new operating system or new application that's coming out. So in a sense, you're never catching up. So the problem in the Windows XP experience is we only had six of the eight that we wanted to get compatible with Windows XP. But those products were not available at the time, the actual date when Windows XP launched. We wanted to change that for the next version of the operating system. And part of the problem, as we dissected what difficulties that we were having, is we conducted this porting lab after the code for Windows XP was locked down. So any technical issues, barriers and whatnot that we encountered in the course of the porting lab, we really couldn't do anything about. We basically had to do a workaround for the particular assistive technology product. So with that particular background, we decided we wanted to apply the lessons learned from Windows XP to our work on Longhorn, which was the code name for the next version of the Windows operating system. And we decided to use the focus for that effort, our Microsoft Assistive Technology Vendor Program. Now, I'm not sure how many of you are familiar with that program, but it's a program that's managed by the Accessible Technology Group, where we provide particular assistance for assistive technology manufacturers. Currently, there are over 150 assistive technology manufacturers from around the world that are part of the our MAPVP program. And those particular manufacturers represent over 300 different types of assistive technology hardware and software products. And if any of those manufacturers were in the room today, they'd probably say the most significant benefit of being a member of the MAPVP program is the premier technical support that's provided by Microsoft via the Accessible Technology Group. Now, premier technical support comes at a great expense to companies that have those kinds of contracts with Microsoft. Typically, an assistive technology manufacturer or vendor are typically very small companies and don't have the resources to have a premier technical support contract with Microsoft, given the hundreds of thousands of dollars that those technical contracts, support contracts, cost. But the Accessible Technology Group provides a premier technical support for all the Microsoft Assistive Technology Vendor Program members. And we believe that helps them resolve the technical issues that they have dealing with our operating systems and applications, and also enable them to provide much better support for their individuals who are using their particular product. Because I would imagine no small number of end users of assistive technology products who are using an operating system or an application, and specifically a new one, using it for the first time, running into a technical difficulty of some kind, calling up their assistive technology manufacturer and being told, well, that's not the problem of the assistive technology, that's the problem of, you know, either the hardware manufacturer or the operating system or the application. So in that particular situation, the end user gets caught in the middle. So we believe this technical support contract will eliminate some of those bottlenecks for the end users. But in any case, in terms of circling the wagons around the Microsoft Assistive Technology Vendor Program, we really set up an objective and a goal to do better in terms of Windows Longhorn. Probably going to be using Windows Longhorn, Windows Vista simultaneously, so bear with me until I sort of have it ingrained in my mind that the operating system does have a name, no longer a code name, any longer. But the first thing that we did to try to improve this compatibility of assistive technology products with a new operating system is we did an extensive survey of the MAPVP membership. And basically what we wanted to find out was, what are the particular techniques and strategies that you are dependent upon for your particular assistive technology hardware or software product to be compatible with our operating system. We were actually asking them for confidential technical information that we promised not to share with other vendors, primarily in the same classification, because as you can imagine, probably some of these techniques and strategies that are used by certain assistive technology manufacturers, they've learned those and acquired those and developed those particular techniques and strategies at great cost to themselves, and it basically is a competitive and strategic advantage for them to have these particular ways to interact with operating systems and applications to ensure that their particular products work. Not all 150 members participated in this, but we got a fairly good amount of technical information that we could assemble in a list that we could monitor as the operating system was under development to identify what particular kinds of techniques and strategies we were going to break as a result of our development of this new operating system. Now, the importance of that is those are the types of things that are only found out after an operating system ships. So a new operating system comes out, an assistive technology product is installed on it, and all of a sudden we find out it's not working. Typically what we find when we scratch below the surface there is a particular strategy or technique or technical way that the product has been architected is no longer supported by the new operating system. So we wanted to keep religious focus on these particular techniques and strategies that were being used by assistive technology manufacturers, so when we did break them or we made any change, we could immediately notify them that they needed to, that we needed to work with them directly to ensure that the product was going to work on the next version of the operating system. The second thing that we did was at the time, now again, this goes back 3 or 4 years now, so I'm in a sense talking history as far as the operating system is concerned. Longhorn, Windows Vista at the time, was really going to, was designed and architected to represent a real significant change in the architecture of the Windows operating system. And we knew that the assistive technology manufacturers, the members of our program, were going to have to do almost, in most cases, a complete rewrite of their applications to be able to work on this new operating system. In other words, they were going to have to invest considerable time and energy. Their product, as it was working on Windows XP, was not going to work. We definitely knew it was not going to work on Windows Vista. So we brought them as many as wanted to attend onto the Microsoft campus for a two-week event. And we provided them with technical training, actual code training, that they were going to have to know to be able to re-architect their particular products so that it would work on this new version of the operating system, because the way their products were going to be architected, the way they were going to be written, and the way they were going to be installed was going to be radically different. And we provided the actual developer guru to actually do the training of the assistive technology manufacturers in this new architectural model that they were going to have to use. At the same time, we had under development a brand new accessibility technology that was going to be included in Windows Vista to replace Microsoft Active Accessibility. Now, the significance of that is that a fair number of screen readers and screen magnifiers, as well as mainstream applications and certainly the operating system, use Microsoft Active Accessibility to provide access for individuals who are blind or visually impaired. We knew at the time that Microsoft Active Accessibility, MSAA, was not going to work on this next version of the Windows operating system. We had to come up with a new architecture. I can't remember what the code name was for that I think it was called PAWS, Programmable Access to Windows. I think that's what the code name was of this architecture. But anyway, when we were doing this training, this two-week training, with the assistive technology manufacturers, we spent a week doing a design review of this new architecture that we were planning to develop for Windows Vista that was going to replace Microsoft Active Accessibility, and we got their feedback. We wanted to get their feedback, their detailed feedback, before we actually architected that, and that was very helpful. But the story at that particular time was the assistive technology manufacturers were going to have to do a lot of work for their applications to work on Windows Vista, and Microsoft, specifically the Accessible Technology Group, had a lot of work to do on this new architectural model that was going to replace Microsoft Active Accessibility. Then everything changed. Became known at Microsoft as a reset. But in actuality, what it represented for the assistive technology manufacturers and specifically for the accessible technology group, that this huge change as far as accessibility goes, moving from Windows XP to Windows Vista, was not going to play out as we had initially expected it was going to. In fact, we, looking through this this technical information that we collected in the course of the survey, we believe that 85 to 90% of the assistive technology products that were already working on Windows XP were going to work just as is on Windows Vista. So if an assistive technology manufacturer had compatibility and had a product up and running on Windows XP, chances are it was going to work just like that, just like it was on Windows XP and Windows Vista. But we continued to track what the specific technical issues and whatnot that the assistive technology manufacturers were to use, just to make sure that we weren't creating any unnecessary barriers. There was one major exception to this that necessitated an architectural move on Microsoft's point in conjunction with assistive technology manufacturers. And I'm guessing each one of you this afternoon can imagine just exactly what types of assistive technology products were caught in that particular, those particular crosshairs. Windows Vista, by design, is an incredibly different appearing, looking operating system. Anyone looking at Windows Vista will immediately be impressed by the very different look to this particular operating system as opposed to Windows XP. Well, to provide that very different look, there was incredible time and energy invested in display and presentation technical capabilities that were built into the operating system, all of which we had to make accessible. And those that new display visual architecture definitely impacted on the screen reader and the screen magnifiers. At the time that we moved from this change from that we anticipated from Windows XP to Windows Vista, we had to come up with a new architectural component to ensure that screen readers and screen magnifiers would be getting the information that they needed from Windows Vista. And the architecture that we came up with as a result of that has to do with mirror driver technology. And what we did was we called in the assistive technology manufacturers, the screen readers and the screen magnifiers, to help us make sure that we got this mirror driver technology when we actually knew that we had to build it to be ready for Windows Vista, that we made sure that we got it right. So they came in and gave us all the feedback and whatnot that I think we needed to work with to ensure that screen readers and screen magnifiers were going to be compatible with Windows Vista when it launched. So that mirror driver technology, and I probably should mention at this particular time, I introduced myself as a product manager within marketing. That is to say that my technical expertise in being able to scratch very deeply below what this mirror driver technology represents is pretty limited. But I do want to emphasize that this particular architecture, this mirror driver technology, is enabling companies like GW Micro, who I'm going to be demonstrating here in just a minute, for their particular WindowEyes product to work with Windows Vista. So we know that this technology is robust enough to work. And then the final component in the story is, I mentioned to you that with Windows XP, we hosted a one-week porting lab on campus for assistive technology manufacturers. For Windows Vista, we hosted a porting lab with no end on the Microsoft campus. In other words, we invited them in. We said, this is about porting your product to Windows Vista. We don't want you to leave here, and we're not going to leave here until you have all of the issues, the technical issues, addressed to ensure that your particular product is going to be compatible with Windows Vista. We scheduled this particular porting lab. I mentioned before that we scheduled the Windows XP porting lab at a time before any changes could be made in the operating system. Well, this particular porting lab was conducted shortly after Beta 1 to ensure that if we did need to make any changes to support assistive technology manufacturers and the particular products that work that need to work on the operating system, and we need to make any changes in the operating system, we definitely had time to do that. And as a result, approximately 30 assistive technology companies arrived on campus for this work till you drop porting lab that we were conducting. And more than half of them left campus with their product already up, whether it was hardware or software, already up and running on a beta 1 version of Windows Vista. So we felt very, very excited about that. In addition, a couple of the assistive technology manufacturers, and I was delighted that these were the screen reader manufacturers, actually asked us whether or not they could take a build of Windows Vista to the CSUN conference in March and actually demonstrate to some of their users that they had a version of their product that was compatible with this upcoming new version of the Windows operating system pre-beta 2. So as I said at the start, that's basically never, to my knowledge, in the 20 years that I've been working on this, these types of things, both at Apple and Microsoft, as far as I know, has never been accomplished. That's sort of the end of the story. I think we've been remarkably successful to date, largely as a result of these steps, these learning from the lessons learned from Windows XP, if you will, the integration of assistive technology manufacturers into the process, the design reviews, the porting labs that we have conducted. One of the things that I didn't mention, we ensured that assistive technology manufacturers had access to interim builds. So they were working with the version of the operating system, the same version of the operating system that Microsoft internal groups were working on, as opposed to waiting for beta 1, beta 2, any of the release candidates, so that we're able to work on the same versions. And certainly their support has been much appreciated. But that's sort of the story. So that when Windows Vista launches in January, there is going to be a whole suite of assistive technology products that are up and running already, that will be published on our website, so that any users of assistive technology that need to use the new version, or want to use or have to use the new version of the operating system, have their assistive technology that's compatible with it the day that the operating system has launched. But before I go into the demos, does anybody have any questions about the story that I just painted, or need some additional details? But Frank needs to bring the microphone around to the person. Roving mic. There we go.
There we are. Hello. I was trying to wake up this mic from its nap.
My name is Betsy, and I get. Could you just tell us briefly what is this mirror driver technology?
Well, I have to preface that by saying I'm not a very technical person. The technology that we were working on, referred to it, the code name PAWS, was going to be the replacement for Microsoft Active Accessibility. And this technology was going to enable largely screen readers and screen magnifiers to get access to much more breadth and depth of information, UI information that was coming out of the operating system. In fact, we believe that this technology is now called UI automation. We believe that UI automation, once it's adopted, will enable assistive technology manufacturers to no longer have to deal with the under-the-hood technical details of an operating system and application, that everything is going to be made available to them that they need for as a result of UI automation, and they will for the first time be able to concentrate on the user experience as opposed to the nitty-gritty technical details. Well, we knew that UI automation was not going to be something that was going to beneficial and to accomplish its goal. It's very similar to Microsoft Active Accessibility, that it has to be part of the operating system, it has to be part of the application, it has to be part of the assistive technology product. But the fact that there was this new presentation foundation that was part of the Windows Vista operating system that would require the re-architecture of the assistive technology to take advantage of, we wanted to provide sort of a bridge between those two things, so they didn't have to extensively rewrite their application, that they could use another technology component for getting that particular display UI information. And the mirror driver technology was the technology that we came up with to provide that interim bridge between Microsoft Active Accessibility and UI automation.
I have a question.
Yes, sir.
This is Frank Welty, and as soon as I'm done, I'm going to turn this microphone over to somebody else. We've heard rumors about various radical changes in the user interface from the existing Windows platform to Vista, such as replacing the menu bar with something called ribbons and other scary-sounding things. Is it your perception that the screen reader, that Access technology is either going to work with these new interface elements out of the box? Alternatively, is there a simple way to revert the interface appearance back to something like Windows XP in the same way that it was easy for people to revert the Windows XP interface with just a few clicks here and there back to a classic view that worked better with screen readers?
Okay, well, I'm going to be actually able to demo that in just a minute, Frank, but the ribbon technology that you're talking about is part of Office 2007, and I know that particular product group at Microsoft has worked very extensively with the assistive technology manufacturers to make that new UI accessible to individuals who are blind or visually impaired as well. So the answer is yes. As far as the reverting to the classic versions, when I first installed WindowEyes, I had it installed on a classic version of the operating system, and I quickly changed over to the non-classic, the new Windows Vista interface, basically because I wanted to make sure that WindowEyes worked in that particular situation, and indeed it did. However, I do know that there, and I'll demonstrate this in just a second. You'll actually be able to hear this. When WindowEyes is turned on with this new UI in Windows Vista, some of this new display technology is automatically turned off. Now, operationally, to me, the computer doesn't work any differently. It's just the way that it looks on the screen, and it's very very difficult for me to describe this. Gosh knows I'm not the world's greatest communicator, but with what you see with Windows Vista is this thing called Glass. So the dialogue boxes and the windows float over one another, and you can actually see through them. As a sighted person, so in essence, I get a clue to the window that's behind the window, and in some cases, the window that's behind that particular window. Now, I haven't gotten used to that, and I don't know whether or not that's going to improve my productivity. At 57 years of age, I doubt it. But it definitely looks good, all right, to a sighted person. It looks like the operating system has been refreshed. Whether or not some of these very different display looks are going to, like I said, the significance is it going to make it more intuitive? Is it going to make it easier to use? Is it going to make it easier to navigate through Windows and whatnot? That, I think the jury is still out on that. But operationally, the operating system, when WindowEyes is turned on, at least in terms of what I'm going to be demonstrating here in just a minute, just basically turns off what I would consider more of the sexy looking graphics that are on the screen. It doesn't affect the windows. It doesn't seem to affect the UI. It just looks different to me. But I do, that's just a long way of answering Frank's question, that when the screen reader comes on, it automatically turns off some of those particular features that are new to Windows Vista, not interrupting the operation. The gentleman towards the back there.
Could I mention something else here? I was talking to, there's three or four of us standing in a group in the assembly this morning talking about that particular window glass, window behind window. Well, there's one who uses screen enlarger. He said it just runs him up the tree. It is very difficult. If you know what I mean. Because you have image behind image. He's using the screen enlarger, not the text reader.
Okay, well, I'll actually see if I can do that. That's a good point. I hadn't experimented with that, but we'll do that this afternoon here. Yes, ma'am. So he's bringing you the mic.
Actually, you've now turned it into two questions.
Okay.
Firstly, when you say the screen reader being active turns off, makes the screen look different. But
those are my words, by the way.
Okay. But what I'm concerned about is if, for example, in the workplace, I've got JAWS, a window I switched on, and I need a colleague to come and get me out of a jam, and they come up to it and say, oh, my God, what's going on with the screen? Is it that different?
No.
Okay.
Not to my eye. It's absolutely it's noticeable. I mean, I like I said, I'm not the world's greatest communicator, so I'm having a hard time, you know, formulating the description of that. Does it what?
Just a question. You understand the question?
I do. To me, it like I said, it doesn't make any difference in terms of the operation of the computer. It's not that different. Where somebody would say, I don't know what's going on in your screen here.
Oh, okay, good. My second question is that ever existing question: are you going to with Vista? Is it going to be possible to prevent application developers talking to Vista unless they're talking in a way that's accessible? And secondly, using Microsoft tools, are you going to be able to force people to write accessible applications?
Well, definitely in terms of the latter, the Microsoft tools will ensure whatever's developed is accessible. I think in answer to your first question, that's going to depend upon the support of some kind of accessibility framework. I think the framework du jour is Microsoft Active Accessibility. But there are some limitations there to Microsoft Active Accessibility. So I don't think it will be until UI automation is in full force that we'll see the kind of inability to structure an application or a tool or a component that's not accessible. So I think we're sort of halfway between the two right now. Yes, sir, in the back? There. Second row from the back there, second chair. Yes, sir.
Okay, the microphone. I'm from the Bronx. I'm from the Bronx, New York. And we have several colleges and other institutions that have adaptable units, accessible units to them. Fordham University, Lehman College, Bronx Community College, Boston Community College, Monroe College. You have the other schools, New York State Institute of Special Education, and other institutions. The technologies you're talking about, I don't know if they're aware of it. And will you be able to come into Bronx County and, if the proper form is presented to you, present, as you're doing here, the type of information so that individuals in Bronx County will be aware of it? The reason why I'm asking, or I set you up, is because on September 16th, the New York Public Library, the Bronx Independent Living Service, and myself will be having a technology expo. And it would be a perfect situation to be able to present this type of technology, which I believe is going to impact on all the other equipment that they're probably using at present.
The accessible technology group is a very, relatively speaking, we have 40-some-odd individuals, relatively small group. We can't address all of the requests and whatnot that we get for participation like this. However, what I'm presenting today, probably any Microsoft employee will soon be able to emulate. As a matter of fact, we have a big conference coming up next week called the Microsoft Global Exchange, where a number of it's an opportunity for all Microsoft employees from around the world to hear about you know, the latest and greatest in our technology, and this is going to be covered extensively in the course of that particular conference. So I would imagine there probably will be somebody from New York State, if not you know, the Bronx, that's going to be attending this Microsoft Global Exchange next week and will be trained up on this. And if there's not, I'm sure somebody within the accessible technology group can find somebody you know, who can address that information, because I do agree with you that they teach you in business school that you can only have you know, two types of problems. You either got a product problem or you got a marketing problem. And I think for far too long, most individuals have thought, you know, if you're dealing with an operating system or an application and you're using assistive technology, you got a product problem. Well, I don't think we got a product problem anymore. I think we do have a marketing problem, because there's the products are out there to make operating systems and applications accessible. And I think what we're going to be able to accomplish with Windows Vista when it comes out, and ultimately Office 7. The fact that we're going to have assistive technology, SIM shipping with it, is information that we got to get out, and would appreciate the opportunity to, you know, participate in an event like you're describing in the Bronx. By the way, I was there not too long ago, and I love the place. It's a great place.
The new library that has just been built on 310 Kingsbridge in Bronx County, which is in the Fordham area, the Fordham shopping area, that's where this technology expo is going to actually take place. Would you be able to, if I gave you my, because my own corporation is a nonprofit, it's called Insight New Housing, if I gave you my contact information, would you be able to give us the contact person from New York?
Yes.
If he was trained up, so we might be able to invite them to participate?
Absolutely, yes, I'd be more than happy to do that. But by the way, Robert, how much time do I have? I mean, I'll be here all, I'd stay here all afternoon with you guys, but I don't know what your limitations are or anything. Are you, you have like a party to go to after this, or? I just don't want to overstay my welcome, and I'm happy if we just want to, you know, discuss and go in the QA right now. I can skip the demo, but there's okay. Let me go to the demos, and then we'll come back, and so. What I have here, and I'm going to be, I just booted up my machine here. And it's going to be booting into a classic version of Windows Vista that will automatically hear WindowEyes come up as soon as I log in. Actually, I booted up into a. This is the full Aeroglass version. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to log off here. Yes. I don't know the answer to that question. Are there any Windows Eyes experts in the room? Anybody that's using Windows Eyes? You are? Okay. Well, it looks like I have access to hold on just a second. Maybe I was going too fast here. Well, definitely there. Now let me describe to you what I think I was a little bit too quick here and probably pressed too many buttons because I turned on the magnifier, the built-in magnifier. So the built-in magnifier is up now. Windows Eyes is up. Actually, it looks like a couple versions of Windows Eyes were launched here. So,
left, dialogue, windows, okay, button.
Okay, now, what I'm going to do is I'm going to, like I said, I'm going to turn off the magnifier.
Is it the same magnifier that's been in
2000? No, this is a new one.
Button, magnifier, welcome center.
Okay.
Computer details, 1 of 11, selected item. View.
Okay, now this is really what I expected to happen when I first logged in. In other words, it came up in the Windows Vista desktop, opened up this thing called the Welcome Center because I haven't checked it not to run at startup, and started Windows. Windows Eyes. Okay, so I have Windows Eyes up and running. At the same time, I'm not sure exactly why the magnifier turned on and why I got into a different version here. But in any case, Windows Eyes is up right now. This is a build of a beta 2 build of Windows Vista. The thing that did happen that I expected to happen is that it turned off this glass, this arrow glass feature automatically. Windows Eyes automatically turned it off when it came up on the desktop. But I'm now looking at the default installation of Windows Vista that I've installed Windows Eyes on to come up when the computer when I log on. I booted into a user where the profile was arrow glass on, and in that particular situation, because remember I said I was going to boot into a version with classic on. I didn't do that, so I misrepresented my demo there. So I booted into the arrow glass version. Windows Eyes came on, so I think that addressed the issue that the gentleman had about why do I need to log off. I really don't have to in this particular situation, although with the classic version I was going to demonstrate ease of access, so I was actually going to log off to be able to do that. But in any case, my understanding is that this is the way it would operate for a user who had just logged on to the machine, needed to have their screen reader running, and needed to have access to the operating system right from the get-go if they were using a Windows Vista machine. Okay, and that's where I'm at right now, with the caveat that I can't explain why the magnifier came on, nor can I explain why, and I believe I did it, I was up here pressing buttons, not paying attention to what I was doing. And I think that's why I turned on the magnifier. But in any case, right now, this welcome center is a new feature of Windows Vista put into the operating system to make it easier for people who haven't used a computer before to get their computer set up. All right, and you have the option of having this welcome center launched every time you boot up the operating system, or you can deselect it so that you go right to the desktop. So I'm going to close that now.
Desktop. Recycle bin. 1 of 3. No selected item. List view.
Okay. So now I have I'm on the desktop with Window Eyes, and one of the brand new UI features, there's been some changes in the start menu. So I'm going to hit the Windows key to call up the start menu.
Start menu, edit box, start search.
Now one of the new features here is that when you initially launch the start menu, it goes right to the search box for entering text. Now this is a UI feature that supposedly makes it easier to be able to navigate around the computer. Now that's very, very different than the XP experience. But I myself haven't gotten used to this new UI, but I do have the ability to be able to use Window Eyes to go through the entire start menu, so I'm going to do that right now just to give you an idea of the items that are there, because this is a default install of Windows Vista.
Jackson, 1 of 13. List view opens the Jackson folder, where you can find folders for documents, pictures, music, and other files that belong to you.
Now Jackson is the user that I'm booted into, and I'm going to navigate through that menu there.
Documents, pictures, music, games, search, recent items, computer, network, connect to, control panel, 11 of 13, pull down, provides options for you to customize the appearance and functionality of your computer, add or remove programs, and set up network connect, default programs, help and support, 13 of 13, pull down, opens a central keeps your session in memory and puts the computer in a low power state so that you can quickly resume working. Button. Keeps your session in memory and puts the computer in a low power state so that you can quickly resume working.
I specifically navigated to that one because that's a an icon, it looks like, to me as I'm looking at the interface, it looks like it's a power down option. It's actually just a puts it into a sleep state.
Internet. List view, all programs, button, edit box, start search.
And then I'm back to the start search. So the way that I work with the computer, although it looks different and that search UI is definitely a new feature, I still feel pretty comfortable in that using Windows Vista is very similar to the XP experience. But the next thing I'm going to do, I'm going to type into the search button and call up the Windows Explorer. The Windows Explorer has some brand new features in it that aid in making the operating system a little bit more intuitive and easier to navigate and search.
Selected item. List view.
Now what I'm looking at here is the Windows Explorer. Now this is the new interface that allows individuals to be able to easily navigate around the operating system, but the benefit here is these live icons and preview panes, so that if you were in in a document view, you'd get these little thumbnail versions of the documents that you had, and you'd basically be able to see what the document looked like before you launched. The same thing for pictures and whatnot. This is supposedly making it easier to be able to navigate around the operating system. Of the Window Eyes users here in the room, are there anything that you'd like me to try in this thing in terms of accessing the operating system? Yes, ma'am.
Yes, try to access a supplementary storage source
other disk drive. Okay, now I would imagine that what I would do here is navigate through the window until I got to that drive. So that's what I'm going to try to do right now and see if I can get to what you're looking for.
Name. Desktop. Split button. Edit box. Search. Organize. Button. Custom control. Expand folders. Button. I. SQ004099P01C. 1 of 2. No selected item. List view.
Okay, now, to my way of looking at it on the screen, I've actually got to the C drive, and I have access to the D drive at this point.
Explorer is giving you access to the folders in one pane and the files in another pane. It sounds like Explorer is giving you access to some controls in addition.
Okay. Well, if you can tell, if I understand your issue correctly, if you can tell me how you would do that with Window Eyes, with Windows XP, I'll do it here. Pardon me.
Let me get you a microphone.
Does anybody have an idea how I'd be able to do that?
The question really is more how you do it with the keyboard than it is how you do it with Windows or George at that point in XP anyway. Normally, I don't use Explorer a lot because I use I'm a DOS user and I go into my computer and do it that way. Or I use the run command and just go straight to the C drive. But in Explorer, you used to have either the choice of it being presented in a list, and you'd hit enter on one of the items in those lists as your down arrow, or you could switch panes and open the folders that way.
Well, to me, I'm just using the keyboard here, and it looks like I can get to anything. So let me see if I can get to something where there actually is a list here, and see if I can navigate through that.
Excuse me.
Okay, now here I expanded the memory, and I'm looking at a list of items underneath this name item, and this allows me to sort within the group. And those are unchecked items, but yes, sir.
In my Windows XP, I go to D and it goes right to documents. And if it was a document and it was labeled A, I hit A and it would take me to a list of A documents. I would just go down, depending on how I had it set up, whether it was in date order or in a different kind of order. Does this version allow you that same kind of convenience, so you can get to various parts of the start menu, whether you hit P or right to programs, or I guess it's hotkeys. Does it allow you that same convenience? Because you're using the keyboard.
Yes.
I go P programs. I went to PC study 5, I hit P, or write the PC study program. If I'm in D, I go to D. If it's the search engine, hit F, or write to find. Yeah.
So at this point, you want me to hit Windows key and P?
Start launch attention. Start menu. Edit box. Start search. P.
I
Okay, that took me right to programs. It didn't?
Performs text-based command line functions. Provides options for you to customize the appearance and functionality of your computer, add or remove programs, and set up network connections and user accounts.
So it's giving me information. I mean, I'm looking at it on the screen, and I'm actually hearing just exactly what's being blitted on the screen. Is that not what we're looking for? Well, let me try it again, and I'll be quiet this time. Now, do I have to have the so close the Explorer. All right, I'm on. All right. Okay, I'm on the desktop, and I hit Windows P and then be quiet. Okay, hold on.
Start wants attention. P.
No, it didn't say programs.
See, when you hit D, it's supposed to go right to documents. But not talking.
Button. Start. Start. Button. Start wants attention. D. Left. Recycle bin. 1 of 3. No selected item. List view. Start wants attention. Start menu. At D.
No, D took me to the same thing. Windows D took me to the same thing.
First you press the Windows key and let it go. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There's the programs for it.
There is a program file.
Yeah.
Simultaneously, it's an individual.
We just want to hear it.
Button.
Yeah, somebody is up here helping me right now, so.
That's the Windows key, isn't it?
This is a Windows key.
That's a Windows key up there.
Yep.
No. Start menu. Edit box. Start search. P.
What did it take it to?
Programs.
See, it's same P, but it's not same programs. It's going to programs, but it's not same programs.
Right.
No, we don't let. Does it have to be set up in order to speak that way where it's at? Or can it be programmed to do that?
Windows photo gallery.
Okay. I hit Windows, then I hit P, and it just said P, it didn't say program files. Then I hit Enter, and it just opened up photos.
Well, that would explain if you got photos in there, that would come before program, right?
Yeah, it has to speak. So then we need to know if we need to hit another P or arrow down.
I think that's the window that's someone that you have to be aware of.
Well, I'm just trying to determine whether or not we've hit some kind of bug here, whether or not it's a known issue. I suspect it's a known issue, but I want to make sure that I'm not misrepresenting that. Yes, sir?
You may have 2 or 3 P items beginning with P in your menu there. So you have, and it's going to go to the first P. But if it doesn't say it, I don't know it. I don't know where it is.
Yes. My name is Jim King, and I have two things to say. First one is a comment. I think we're all looking at this as if it's Windows XP. There's a different user interface here that we don't know how to operate yet. And it may very well be that WindowEyes is working the way it should, and we have to figure out another shortcut or a different way to work our way through the operating system. So I think there's a learning curve on our part as users as well. The second question I have, is often we work with people who are sighted to teach them how to use their computer. Now, if the access technology, WindowEyes or JAWS or some other speech program that we might be using, changes the UI, maybe not under the hood, but at least what the user, the sighted user, would be seeing, then that's going to create a real communication barrier for us in teaching people who are sighted how to use their computer. Is there a solution for that, or am I barking up the wrong tree?
No, the plan is that we're going to create a tips and help document to address those particular issues and have it posted to the website well in advance of Windows Vista, the launch of Windows Vista. See, that is definitely a known issue. That's why I pointed out that issue when I hit the Windows key and went right to this search button, that's a brand new issue with Windows Vista that would have to be addressed in the tips. But yeah, we're planning on doing that and addressing that. Frank, did you have another question back there?
Oh no, I was just taking the mic over again.
All right. Is there some? There's a gentleman way in the back of the room with his hand up.
Way in the back. Now remember, my eyes are as bad as the rest of you. So if you want somebody to just ask for Frank.
Yeah, it's Frank. Yeah.
Hello, Frank.
Right here. Oh, yeah. In previous versions of Windows, there was a separate component in the control panel about accessibility features. Is this implemented in some new fashion in this new product?
Yeah, let me go ahead and demonstrate that right now. I can come back to Windowize if you want, but what I'm going to do now is I'm going to shut down Windowize and I'm going to open up something called Ease of Access.
Graphic. Right. Right.
Okay, when I shut Windowize off, now I get the glass look back on the screen. I want to do this so when I call up the magnifier, we can address that issue that Robert was talking about a little bit earlier. But I'm going to open up Ease of Access in the control panel. Now, this Ease of Access utility is put in there basically to replace the wizard and the utility manager that was there previously. This is basically to make it basically to be a one-stop center where individuals can customize the machine for their individual needs, and Ease of Access takes them through all of those components. We'll also when I turn this on, you'll also be able to hear one of the new Microsoft voices.
Computer easier to use. You can use the tools in this section to help you get started. Windows can read and scan this list automatically. Press the space bar to select the highlighted tool. You can tap through the options and select them by pressing the space bar.
Now the options that come up for me at this particular point is I can start the magnifier, I can start narrator, I can start the on-screen keyboard, or I can set up high contrast. And I also have the option of exploring all the other the settings that are there. Use the computer without a display, make the computer easier to see, use the computer without a mouse or a keyboard, and so on. But at this point, I'm going to turn on the magnifier because I do have the glass up there, and I want to see the issue that Robert was talking about previously. So I'm going to start the magnifier. The new features of the magnifiers. Being able to, instead of the older one being able to magnify up to 9 times, the new one magnifies up to 16 times, and I can the amount of space here that can be allocated to the magnifier is approximately the full screen. So now it's currently docked at the top of the screen. And I'm going to enlarge it just a little bit. And I'm going to open up another window here. Let's open up the something like the notepad. Put that up on the desktop, and then you can walk me through this situation that Robert was alluding to earlier. Well, one of the things I'm looking at right now, which may or may not be the issue that you were addressing, this is only a couple times magnification, and looking in the magnification window, I can very clearly see the window eyes icon behind the glass. All right, so it's not within focus. But it's enough of an issue there that I would imagine if I could. No, maybe that's not the case. I mean, I can see it, but it doesn't look like I can actually select it. Even though I can see it through the glass, do you know what I mean? It looks selectable, but it's not. And if
it's probably a keyboard. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, when I select anywhere in that window, I'm not taken off the window. In other words, the focus remains on the topmost window. Anything that I'm pressing that I can see below it is not something I can get to. Alt tab. Well, Alt-Tab at this particular point, because I'm on the Ease of Access Center window, actually gives me the Tools command bar to that window.
It does seem a bit like change for change's sake.
But I'm not taking off that Ease of Access window. Now, somebody said if I increase the magnification, what should I take the magnification up here? Up to 8? I take that back. I had it on 16 times magnification. So I don't think ratcheting it down is going to make any difference. Yeah. No, not that I can see. All right. Well, let me just go on and summarize here for a second. Then we can get to the continue our discussion or Q&A, whatever works for you folks. So. We believe we've made some significant investments in getting screen readers and screen magnifiers up and running and compatible with Windows Vista, and believe they're going to be shipping with the operating system when it launches next year. There's still a lot of work that needs to be done, as you can probably tell from. Some of the things that even in the course of the demo here, we're still working very, very closely with the assistive technology manufacturers on this. Beta 2 hasn't been out that long, so we're still just getting end user feedback on this new operating system as well. Basically, what we have to do. Next, I believe, is there's still plenty of room for improvement, a better way to bridge the technical gaps, to reduce the cost of accessibility software, to increase usability of Windows Vista, the usability of the new version of the operating system. So if any of you have ideas, suggestions, or anything along that line, I'd certainly be very interested in hearing about those items. And again, I do thank you for allowing me to come here and present to you this afternoon. And like I said, I'll be more than happy to take any questions, additional questions that you might have, or discussions for as long as you folks want to stay. Frank, there's a gentleman with his hand up in the front row.
Okay, remember, hand up doesn't work for you. Well.
Over here, Frank.
Moving up to the front?
Yeah, here
we are. I have a question. We talk about, after it's up and running, what about install? I mean, I'm one of these people that are used to seeing be able to get down to the bottom and install like Linux, and I can install from scratch. What about installing this system? Is there a point in time where we can get into the narrator and work with it from an installation point?
Mean use the narrator to install?
Pretty much from the beginning all the way through.
Okay. I don't see any.
I mean, with XP, you can't do it from the very beginning, but once you get into your customer set, you can.
Well, I mean, how could I demonstrate that for you right now?
Well, we're asking not for a demo, but just, is it doable? In other words, we have that ongoing problem with Windows where we can use it, but we couldn't necessarily install it by ourselves. So that, for example, if we ran into a problem where the solution to the problem was a reinstall of Windows, we were hosed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, as far as I know, that's an issue that we wanted to resolve with the new narrator. So the capabilities to enable the user to be much more independent with those kinds of things. But I don't know specifically how to address that or how to answer your question whether or not it's currently capable, it's possible or not to do that.
Well, there's
somebody else. This is me, Rob Rogers. With me, every time something goes wrong, I either have to twist somebody's arm so they can drive across town to help me to fix it, or go pay somebody $100 or $200 to come in and fix it. And that's no fun.
Right. I don't know how to address that issue, or even how to frame it so I could get an answer back to you. I do know that the whole idea of including these accessibility features like the magnifier and the narrator in the operating system and making the changes and enhancements to them is to enable individuals to be more independent as far as the management and control of their systems. I mean, that's not to say that...
Well, what would be nice on that aspect is to maybe either have the CD automatically come up the top or have some known hotkey to activate the CD in there.
Coming over to the mic. Yeah, I know.
Over here.
Good afternoon. What I'd like to know is, and I sneaked in a bit late, so I do apologize for that. Is the remote assistant, I work on the Adaptive Technology Help Desk for the Chicago Lighthouse, and one of the things I have to do is sometimes help people to fix issues that they call in about. Is remote assistance going to be available in Vista? And if so, will it be usable using this access technology? Thank you.
I don't know the answer to that question, but I will take it back and then provide an answer to that with the meeting notes.
Frank?
happening over there anymore. First of all, I'd like to thank you very much for coming. We all enjoyed it. I think we should give him a hand. John, is there a way in which you would get us the notes for the presentation? Can we work that out so all of us get those?
Might be a newsletter article. I'm not sure I have a specific tool. There might be a bit of a list, sir.
Yes, there is a bit of a list, sir. How about if you could get the notes and, like, you know, where or some format, and then, you know, if we know you have them, we email you simply and ask for them.
Right. Well, I will put the notes together, at least in terms of my ability to reconstruct what went on here this afternoon, whatever format that you want them in. But I'd like to have somebody on your end actually review them to make sure that I didn't miss anything or you know, misrepresent anything or whatever the case may be. Who would that be?
We could give you an email address that you could send it to.
Okay.
And then we could distribute it.
Okay.
I wonder.
Well, I'm talking about that. I'd like to have it reviewed before you distribute it, just to make sure I'm not missing anything.
Okay. Could you go into Notepad? Could we see one of the programs work?
Sure.
Or
so I will turn Window Eyes back on. Do you want me to open Notepad or WordPad?
Untitled Notepad. Edit box.
Now hit the Alt key.
File F pull down.
That works.
They work.
Yeah.
That
works. Now arrow to the right.
Edit view pull down.
Yeah.
Yep.
Format O pull down.
Now down arrow.
Word wrap W.
Yep.
That's making it. Now hit Alt again.
Menu closed.
Good.
Edit box.
I should have just done that and then left. Thank you very much. That's what I was hoping you folks could take me through some of this, because obviously I'm not a Window Eyes user, and my only ability to be able to interact with the program is have it running while I'm working on the computer, just make sure that it's keeping up with me and it seems to be saying what I'm seeing. I don't know if that makes any sense. And that's what my experience has been with Window Eyes to date. I have it on this machine when I'm doing my email or I'm writing a note and whatnot. It seems to be following me around. Now, of course, I'm not using the keyboard as much as I am using I'm mousing around the system. When I want to use Window Eyes, and I'm demonstrating Window Eyes, I'm using the keyboard, but I'm not as good with the keyboard as you folks are. So I'm not doing.
Gary, I've heard several comments from others saying that the testers, there are two criteria they could use, or two conditions they could use when they're testing how accessible. One is to turn the monitor off, And the other is to unplug the mouse. Can you make it without those two items?
I don't think I could probably do without the monitor, but I definitely could not do without the mouse.
My observation is you could use it.
That is probably the case, yeah. Well, no, but with a screen reader working, I'm getting feedback when I'm using the mouse. Part of the time when I was doing the demo this afternoon, I wasn't looking at the screen and I was moving the mouse around and I knew where I was because of the feedback that I was getting. That is true.
This is John Denning again. Well, one, it would be difficult using the mouse without a monitor because you just sort of have to wiggle it all over the screen to find something. But I just wanted to sort of recap the question that you said you just didn't quite understand how to verbalize it or whatever. But
this was the magnifier question?
No, about installing software.
Oh, okay.
This is a major issue for any of us who work in IT. That want to be complete, and home users definitely, because you don't have other support people around. But you need to reinstall your operating system, or you build a new computer, and you have an OEM version of Windows, and you want to install it from square one, not from square two or three, but from square one. You want to put in that new CD, and you want to be able to install it all by yourself without any sighted user around. So we want either the CD to come up automatically, and I will point this out just because it's being done elsewhere, but like over here installing on a Macintosh, you put in a CD or the DVD. If you don't do anything for 2 minutes, it comes up and says, "You want me to talk?" And from then on, you have voice.
Yeah.
So if Windows could do that, that would just be a boon to all of us. I mean, we would love it.
What isn't that a part of the Windows Explorer part, the ability to be able to add a program? Well, hold on a second. I'm gonna navigate to where I think you're. Oh, I see. Okay, I'm thinking in terms of you got Windows and you want to install a program. I see. Okay. All right. I got you. Okay. All right.
The simple way to do it, have it the same way as you have Windows and Jaws. You put the CD and it says install with or without speech.
Right. I got it. I was thinking you already had the operating system. Thank you for clarifying. Frank, go ahead.
Let me just summarize it or follow up on, I think, what the sentiment we're hearing right now is that I think there are four basic long-term difficulties that the blind community has had with Microsoft in specific areas. First off, and these are all areas that we have been hammering on you for over 10 years. Item number one is that we want to be able to open up the Windows operating system box. We're not talking about applications. I'm coming to that later. We want to be able to plug in the CD and install the thing just like everybody else. It may be tricky, but you've had 10 years and more to figure it out. Item number two is that we want our Microsoft applications to follow generally accepted standards, which even Microsoft promotes in accessibility. Unfortunately, we don't need you to tell you how often that hasn't happened. And number three is that it's important that Microsoft's own software development tools aid in the production of accessible software. And number four is that Microsoft Press books need to be available in accessible formats. These are all four items we've been dealing with for a decade. And we're not asking you to give you a specific answer for this because you didn't come here to talk about those, but we would like you to at least give the feedback that those are ongoing sore spots in the blind community and that we haven't been satisfied with the attempts to solve them up to this point.
Right.
Can I add to that? If your computer goes down and you try to bring it back up, you can't do a thing until the whole system is back up and your access technology is working. You're dead in the water until the whole system is back up. If Windows goes bad and it's not running, we're dead. That we're dead in our jobs, in our home activities, and we can't move till somebody else fixes it. And that's no fun. It either is costly to us, to our boss, or in time.
Okay.
Coming back. Okay.
I know this is going to seem like we're piling on, but we are. The other thing that needs to happen is you, Microsoft, and others that provide technical support, even the people over in India, need to understand that not everybody uses the mouse, and they need to learn how to communicate keyboard commands. When I call and I say I'm visually impaired, you'll need to instruct me using how to do what you need me to do using the keyboard. Or when I'm with a help desk client and I say that same thing, they need to be able to bring up a program or something that helps them do the equivalent keyboard commands so that we can get the person's problem fixed. And another area, we need to be able to go into safe mode just like anybody else to run drivers and do things like that.
Just click on this, they say.
Just click on
it. You can go to the red X up in the left corner.
Frank?
Coming in.
I'm sorry about that. Microphone in your stomach. Just to perhaps make that the safe mode issue a little bit more expanded. One, if your computer goes down and you've got to boot up in safe mode, up until now you couldn't run your access technology because the SAN drivers weren't available at that point in the process. Just to make that a little clearer for you.
Okay, I think we're done now. you can come up from under the desk.
Is there something else that I can demonstrate here with Windows Vista and WindowEyes that would be of interest to you? That's the other thing.
WindowEyes, what's new in Vista? Tell us more about Vista.
I'll ask something that's a little back on a positive note. Is can you tell us how things are coming along with Office 2007 and Windows Vista and accessibility and all that?
I don't have Office on this. I can show you my favorite new. I don't know whether or not this is a new feature or not, but I'm going to open up Explorer. I missed that, Robert. Would you repeat that?
This morning, someone was telling me that the search engine in Windows Vista is much more powerful. You can just type in a couple of letters and find the world, wasn't it?
Well, that was Windows Explorer feature that defaults right into the search, and search is integrated throughout all of the operating system that I was talking about. I haven't used that myself, but that's there. So one of the features here of Internet Explorer is the ability to be able to, what's the magnification capability within Explorer? I have it at 100%, but I can go up to 400%. And it's pretty impressive when you're able to do that right within the browser. The other feature there is the tab capabilities, being able to create multiple tabs in terms of managing the browser, the windows that are the websites that are open on the desktop. I'm not sure how to keyboard to that particular part, but there's Alt Tab.
Control tab.
Yeah, there it is. Right, so that those tab capabilities and the ability to create additional tabs for being able to when you're accessing the internet, I think is a pretty neat feature as well.
Refresh F5.
What no the tabs that I'm looking at are ones that I created within Explorer to be able to navigate the websites that I've gone to.
Like
right, but they're tabs.
So tabs.
They're tabs.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, favorites is still there. I'm not sure how to keyboard to that. Alt A. Yeah, that opened up favorites. But the ability to be able to tab, right.
Refresh F5.
How did you get me to those tabs before? Was that Control T?
Control tab.
Three links, five headings. Link or information button.
Sometimes you have to be in the name of a tab before
link
you can get
information.
That didn't take me to the tabs that I'm talking about that I'm looking at. On the screen, it took me to the tabs within the browser themselves.
How about just the tab by itself?
No link or control. No link or control.
No, that's not getting me to the. I mean, I was there. I was there before.
Hit the alt key to close your menu.
My left will dump.
Okay, the alt key you had it. Hit it again.
Hit the alt key again.
Yes.
Menu closed.
About your left.
My left will dump.
Well, wait a minute. That just got me to the command bar. Let me see if I can get to it from there.
Add a view, favorites, tools key, middle page pull, file left pull down.
Get all.
Tab T, Control T, exit X.
What I need to hit?
Menu closed. File left pull down.
Hit the alt again.
Menu closed.
It looks to me like the focus is on one of these tabs as I'm looking at it on the screen.
Try hitting your left or right arrow.
Oh.
Okay,
tab. Oh.
No.
Tab. No link or control.
Yeah, I'm not sure, but to me it's a very cool feature to be able to. Navigate around websites. Well, it looks to me like there's only three tabs here on the screen that I'm looking at, and it looks like the first tab has the focus right now to me as I'm looking at it on the screen.
Do it all tabs, see if it'll cycle back through there.
Task switching. Window eyes.
No, that's
cycles the window.
Windows might have a different command.
Yeah. Well, anyway, I'm sure there's a way of getting to. I'm just not sure what the keyboard sequence is to get there, but that tab capability, in addition to the magnification capability, I think is very cool.
By the way, Rob, is remote
mic
Close tab when you're grabbing. Close tab dialog box.
Cancel C.
Often the way you change the tab is to use your arrow keys, so both left and right arrow to move the tab.
Right. That even when I had the focus didn't seem to need to work.
Somebody was suggesting you might try Alt F1. Apparently that's
Alt F1. Hold on a second. Let me get the.
Apparently that's what Firefox
accessory
70 to allow you to move between tabs.
Okay, now I'm definitely on the tab now, although I'm not seeing the second tab that I created, but there is the ability to create a new tab at this particular point, given what I'm looking at on the screen. So what would be the key sequence
Control
I would use?
Control F1, I think.
Control F1? Now that Control F1 brought up the help dialog. F2 didn't do anything. Control 1? No.
Frank, why don't you come and get this other microphone?
No. It obviously has the focus.
Hi.
No. Anything else?
One quick question, Gary.
Yes, sir.
Maybe it's in the user interface. Could you go to where we could find the list of keyboard commands? Just curious to hear if you.
That would be.
Left.
Yeah, that's what I'm navigating
Windows
to right now.
Windows keyboard commands. I'm sorry, not the window I.
Thanks.
It's getting the help content right now, and I think it's going to drop me. This is asking if I want it online. I'll select no. So, let me go to search. Okay, so there's
32 links, one table, custom control. Link connect to the internet or get most up to date content with the link for your archives. 13 links, 10 tabs. Link show all content. Keyboard shortcuts can make it easier to interact with your link show all content show all. Link show content ease of access keyboard shortcuts.
Is that the one you want?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
There's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 other
keyboard shortcuts. There's general keyboard shortcuts, dialog box, Windows
general.
Explorer. General?
Yeah.
Heading 3. Link show content general keyboard shortcuts. Heading 3. Link show content dialog box keyboard shortcuts. 16 links, 1 table, 10 headings. Link show content Microsoft keyboard shortcuts. Link show content. 16 links, 2 tables, 10 headings. The following table contains keyboard shortcuts. The following table contains keyboard shortcuts for use in dialog boxes.
I'm looking at them. I'm not sure how to navigate to them, so they read them out.
Link hide content dialog box keyboard shortcuts.
Down arrow.
The following table contains.
Of course, you may have to focus on one with your mouse. We'll let you get away with that.
They want you to get focused. So I see it's reading them now.
Sometimes tabbing will work.
Move back through tabs. Tab. Move forward through options.
Okay, so it's reading what's under press this key and then to do this. So the next one would be shift tab.
Shift tab.
And then move back through options.
Move back through options. LT underlined letter.
To make it read continuously, if you press Control Shift R, it'll just start reading, and then if you want it to stop, press the escape key.
LT underlined letter, perform the command or select the option that goes with that letter. Enter replaces clicking the mouse for many selected command spacebar. Select or clear the checkbox if the active option is a checkbox. Select the button if the active option is the group of option buttons. F1. Display the items in the active list space. Open the folder but left if the folder is selected in the save as or open dialog box table to keyboard shortcuts for dialog boxes and link your content Microsoft keyboard shortcuts. Link your content Windows Explorer. Keyboard shortcuts.
I'm not reading all the links.
Okay, so it read everything that was on that
right.
The bottom of the help screen.
So we do have then, so there is a good list of keyboard shortcuts in Windows Vista, that's good.
Yes.
User, you would learn that's an HTML code system, so you would learn how to navigate that using the table reading commands provided by your screen reader.
Right.
And you would only find the commands that you went into the help system to locate.
Right.
You wouldn't have to read the whole thing that we did there.
Yes.
Ladies and gentlemen, there. And it's sort of getting into our more sort of esoteric type thing, and I hope you've enjoyed what you heard. I'm not sure about Vista and keyboard access, but make your mind up, listen to it. It'll be on the on-demand section. Have another listen, and you decide what you think. This is Chris E. Kaufman, ACB Radio Mainstream, saying bye from the Hyatt Regency. And we'll be back tomorrow with the general session at 13 hours UTC.
I am sorry, but your baby is blind, the doctor says.
The problem is your child cannot see well enough to keep up with classroom work,
the teacher says. These are words a parent never wants to hear. But you know, it doesn't have to be the end of the world. The American Council of the Blind is here for you and your child. With a national network of state and local chapters, the American Council of the Blind can make sure that you meet the people who understand blindness. We will ensure that your child meets blind people who have succeeded in getting